Corinne Slaughter's debut thriller Blindsided took the literary world by storm when it was published in 2001, launching what would become the best-selling Grant County series. The novel, which Stephen King praised as a tour de force, introduces readers to pediatrician/medical examiner Sarah Linton and police chief Jeffrey Tolliver in the fictional town of Hartsdale, Georgia. Its unflinching examination of violence against women and psychological trauma established Slaughter as a formidable voice in crime fiction. The book has sold over 35 million copies worldwide and has been translated into 37 languages, cementing its status as a modern classic in the thriller genre. Even two decades after its publication, Blindsided continues to shock and captivate new readers with its intricate plotting and unforgettable characters. The sleepy town of Hartsdale, Georgia, seems an unlikely setting for brutal murder. Yet beneath its placid surface, darkness lurks. We meet Sarah Linton, a woman juggling dual roles as pediatric and county medical examiner, as she delivers devastating news about 12-year-old Jimmy Powell's leukemia diagnosis. Her day is already complicated by family tensions and an uncomfortable call from her ex-husband Jeffrey Tolliver, the town's police chief. A mysterious postcard reading, "Why hast thou forsaken me?" arrives, foreshadowing the horror to come. When Sarah steps into the local diner's bathroom during her lunch break, she discovers Sybil Adams, a blind college professor, brutally attacked. Despite Sarah's desperate attempts at CPR, Sybil dies in her arms, blood pooling around them on the bathroom floor. The crime scene reveals a methodical killer who left a ritualistic signature, a cross-shaped wound carved across Sybil's abdomen. Jeffrey quickly recognizes this isn't the work of an amateur, but someone making a calculated statement. The killer knew where to find Sybil, followed her into the bathroom, and executed a ritualistic attack. When Sarah asks if the killer will stop with just one victim, Jeffrey's answer is chilling: no. This single word sets the tone for the investigation to come. They are hunting a predator who has only begun his reign of terror. The investigation takes a personal turn when Detective Lena Adams learns the victim is her twin sister. The morgue scene is haunting, the twins identical in appearance, one alive with grief, the other lifeless on the table. Lena's anguish manifests as rage directed at Sarah, screaming that a doctor should have been able to save her sister. The confrontation escalates until Lena physically attacks Jeffrey before collapsing in sobs, setting up the complex emotional dynamics that will drive the investigation forward. The novel delves deeply into how trauma reshapes lives, leaving wounds that never fully heal. Lena's grief after Sybil's murder manifests as self-destructive behavior, drinking heavily while driving, neglecting her health, and recklessly pursuing leads against Jeffrey's orders. Her relationship with her Uncle Hank remains strained by their difficult history, including the childhood accident that blinded Sybil when Hank struck her with his car while driving drunk. The most profound exploration of trauma comes through Sarah's character. As the investigation progresses, we learn that Sarah harbors a devastating secret. 12 years earlier, she was brutally raped by a hospital janitor named Jack Allen Wright. The attack left her unable to have children after an ectopic pregnancy required a partial hysterectomy. For over a decade, she's received annual postcards from her attacker with biblical verses, a reminder that her past is never truly behind her. When Sarah finally reveals her history to Jeffrey by leaving him the trial transcript, his reaction is devastating. He reads it repeatedly, sobbing for the Sarah he never knew. Their subsequent conversation lays bare how trauma reverberates through relationships. "I bared my soul to you, and your response was to get out of town," she tells him, explaining how the rape took 15 minutes but wiped out everything she'd built. She's devastated that Jeffrey sees her as a victim rather than supporting her strength. The novel also explores how trauma can be transmitted across generations. We learn that Jeb McGuire, the killer, was inspired by Jack Allen Wright's assault on Sarah years earlier. His own sister, Sally, died after a botched abortion, and we discover he had sexually abused her. This cycle of violence and victimization forms the dark heart of the narrative, suggesting that trauma, when left unaddressed, can spawn new horrors. The investigation intensifies when a second victim, Julia Matthews, is found displayed on the hood of Sarah's car at the hospital, nude, drugged, with duct tape over her mouth. The crime scene is meticulously arranged, with Julia positioned in a crucifixion pose. Sarah takes charge of treatment, discovering the woman has been drugged with belladonna, her teeth knocked out, body scrubbed with bleach, and showing signs of sexual assault. Most disturbing is Sarah's discovery that Julia has been literally crucified, her hands and feet punctured through the center with wood slivers under her nails. The symbolism is unmistakable, pointing to a killer obsessed with religious imagery. When Julia regains consciousness, she reveals that her attacker claimed to be making love to her, adding another disturbing layer to his pathology. The investigation takes a tragic turn when Julia, unable to cope with her trauma, grabs Lena's gun during an interview and commits suicide. This escalation forces the investigators to recognize they're dealing with a serial predator who is evolving, moving from quick assault and murder to keeping victims for days while perfecting his ritualistic approach. Jeffrey pursues a lead to Atlanta, investigating Jack Allen Wright, Sarah's rapist who was released on parole. Wright's house reveals disturbing religious imagery, crucifixes lining the walls, posters of Jesus defaced with red paint enhancing the wounds. Jeffrey discovers Wright has been following Sarah through online news articles, collecting over 60 stories mentioning her. When confronted, Wright taunts Jeffrey with explicit details about raping Sarah, nearly causing Jeffrey to lose control. While Jeffrey focuses on Wright, the real killer strikes again, abducting Lena. She awakens in complete darkness, disoriented and naked on a rough wooden floor. The rhythmic sound of dripping water connects her situation to Julia Matthews's description, confirming she's in the hands of the same predator. Throughout the novel, characters hide behind carefully constructed facades that conceal their true natures, each wearing different masks for different purposes, some for protection, others for deception. The most dramatic revelation comes when the killer's identity is finally exposed. Jeb McGuire, the seemingly gentle town pharmacist who had cultivated a caring, professional demeanor and had been pursuing a romantic relationship with Sarah. His ordinary, even charming exterior masked a psychopath who targeted women in a twisted religious ritual inspired by Sarah's original attacker. McGuire's ability to maintain his friendly neighborhood pharmacist persona while committing horrific acts demonstrates how effectively people can compartmentalize their darker natures. Sarah herself maintains a protective mask, hiding her rape trauma from nearly everyone in her life, including close friends and colleagues. When she finally reveals her past to Jeffrey, she explains how she rebuilt herself. "I took what happened to me and I locked it away." This compartmentalization allowed her to function professionally as a pediatrician and build a new life, but it created an emotional wall between her and others, particularly Jeffrey, during their marriage. Her carefully maintained composure occasionally cracks, revealing glimpses of her underlying pain, especially when treating young victims of abuse at her practice. Jeffrey wears his own mask of confidence and authority as police chief, concealing his vulnerabilities, including his continued love for Sarah and his deteriorating health issues. When Sarah discovers he's been missing doses of his blood pressure medication, we glimpse the fragility beneath his strong exterior. His facade extends to his leadership style, maintaining an appearance of unwavering certainty even when cases leave him deeply shaken, particularly those involving children or domestic violence. Lena's tough detective persona serves as armor against her grief and family trauma. Her relationship with her twin sister Sybil was complex and layered. Lena had always worked to help Sybil be independent despite her blindness, but harbored unacknowledged jealousy about Sybil's relationship with her partner Nan Thomas. This jealousy stemmed not just from sharing her sister's affection, but from witnessing a depth of intimacy she herself struggled to achieve in her own relationships. Even secondary characters maintain intricate facades. Sarah's mother, Kathy, reveals she once had an affair and nearly left Sarah's father, a confession that reshakes Sarah's understanding of her parents' seemingly perfect marriage. The local reverend maintains a public image of piety while struggling with alcoholism, and the town's mayor presents a face of moral authority despite corrupt business dealings. These revelations suggest that everyone harbors secrets beneath their public personas, and that knowing someone completely may be impossible. The novel ultimately explores how these masks both protect and isolate, serving as both shelter and prison for those who wear them. Violence in Blindsided serves as a crucible that reveals characters' true natures, stripping away social veneers to expose raw humanity beneath. When Sarah discovers Sybil Adams dying in the diner bathroom, her body mutilated and positioned in a grotesque tableau, her medical training takes over despite her visceral horror. Her hands remain steady, even as her mind recoils, demonstrating how professional instincts can transcend personal trauma. Later, when Julia Matthews goes into cardiac arrest, Sarah performs increasingly aggressive life-saving measures, including manually massaging the woman's heart through a chest incision when conventional methods fail. This desperate act, performed on a dirty floor with improvised tools, showcases both Sarah's technical skill and her fierce determination to preserve life in the face of death. Jeffrey's response to violence reveals his protective instincts, but also his capacity for barely contained rage. When confronting Jack Wright, he nearly loses control, breaking Wright's ankle monitor and having him arrested on a technicality, an abuse of power driven by his fear for Sarah's safety. His anger stems from love, but demonstrates how violence can corrupt even those dedicated to justice. The incident forces Jeffrey to confront his own potential for brutality, especially when those he loves are threatened. His struggle between maintaining professional detachment and succumbing to personal vengeance becomes a central tension throughout the investigation. For Lena, violence triggers both vulnerability and remarkable psychological resilience. When captured by Jeb, she creates elaborate mental escapes. Vivid dreams of floating in the warm ocean with Sybil or passionate sexual encounters with her ex-boyfriend to survive the systematic torture. Her mind fragments these memories into protective shields, weaving them into survival tools. As Jeb prepares to nail her hands to the floor, she closes her eyes and retreats to her beach fantasy, this time flying, showing how the mind can dissociate to endure unbearable pain. These mental refuges reveal Lena's extraordinary capacity for psychological adaptation under extreme duress. The most disturbing transformation comes through Jeb McGuire, whose ordinary exterior, that of a respected community member and businessman, conceals a monster of methodical cruelty. His violence is calculated and deeply symbolic. He quotes Bible verses while torturing victims, positions them in crucifixion poses, and tells Lena that blood makes a good lubricant while preparing to remove her teeth with pliers. His religious obsession perverts sacred symbols into instruments of terror, revealing how twisted ideology can justify the most horrific acts. Jeb's careful documentation of his crimes in journals and photographs shows a mind that doesn't merely embrace violence but elevates it to a perverse art form, demonstrating how seemingly normal individuals can harbor unfathomable darkness. Through each character's encounter with violence, the novel explores how trauma can either break people or forge them into stronger versions of themselves while never flinching from the psychological cost of survival. The novel meticulously dissects the systemic failures in the criminal justice system that enable sexual predators to continue their cycles of violence. Jack Allen's Wright's case exemplifies these shortcomings. Despite attacking 6 women and brutally raping Sarah, he served merely 10 years in prison. The light sentence stemmed from procedural issues with victim identifications and a plea bargain that prioritized expedient case resolution over justice. Wright's post-release conditions, depot provera treatments, and an electronic monitoring bracelet prove tragically inadequate when Jeffrey confronts him, exposing how easily offenders can circumvent these supposed safeguards. The system's failure to protect victims extends far beyond sentencing. Sarah endures psychological warfare through Wright's annual postcards, each arrival precisely timed to coincide with her attack anniversary. These messages, though clearly intended to terrorize, fall into a legal gray area that leaves authorities claiming they're powerless to intervene. Wright's obsessive tracking of Sarah's professional life reveals another dangerous gap in victim protection. He amasses 63 news articles about her career, maintaining detailed notes about her appearances and achievements. Despite this clear pattern of stalking behavior, no mechanism exists to flag or prevent such monitoring until Jeffrey's investigation accidentally uncovers it. Institutional prejudices within law enforcement compound these systemic failures. The investigation repeatedly reveals how racism and sexism influence police work, sometimes subtly and sometimes blatantly. When Will Harris, a respected elderly black resident, becomes a person of interest, several officers immediately make assumptions based on racial stereotypes, leading to aggressive questioning that borders on harassment. This institutional bias culminates in someone throwing a brick through Harris's window with a racist threat attached, an act that initially receives less thorough investigation than similar incidents involving white victims. The department's treatment of female officers reflects deeply embedded sexism. Lena Adams faces constant subtle undermining from male colleagues, particularly her partner Frank Wallace, who makes dismissive comments about women's intuition and questions her judgment on tactical decisions. Female victims often face similar skepticism, with their accounts subjected to more rigorous scrutiny than male witnesses receive. The mental health support system proves particularly inadequate for trauma survivors. Julia Matthews' case highlights this failure most tragically. She receives no meaningful psychological support after her assault, leading to her eventual suicide during a police interview. The department's approach to officer mental health proves equally problematic. When Lena struggles after her sister's murder, the response is punitive rather than supportive. Jeffrey threatens her with demotion for disobeying orders, failing to recognize her actions as trauma responses requiring intervention rather than discipline. This systemic neglect of mental health needs creates a cycle where trauma compounds trauma, leaving both victims and first responders without adequate support mechanisms. Hartsdale, Georgia appears idyllic on the surface, but the investigation reveals the dark undercurrents flowing beneath small-town life. The local diner, where Sybil Adams is brutally murdered, stands as more than just a crime scene. It represents the beating heart of the community. For decades, it has served as the unofficial town hall, where farmers gather for pre-dawn coffee, high school students crowd booths after football games, and retired couples share Sunday breakfast. The violation of this cherished space sends shockwaves through the community, forcing residents to question their assumptions about safety in their close-knit world. The interconnected nature of small-town relationships creates a complex web that both aids and impedes the investigation. Sarah Grant faces the gut-wrenching task of performing autopsies on people whose family she's known for years. When examining Sybil's body, she recalls teaching the victim's niece in summer camp. Jeffrey Tolliver must interview suspects he shared holiday dinners with and coached in Little League. These personal connections make professional detachment nearly impossible. Every lead followed feels like a potential betrayal of community trust. Small-town gossip operates as a double-edged sword throughout the investigation. The local rumor mill churns constantly, with speculation spreading faster than official information. At the pharmacy, Marty Ringo's seemingly casual comment about how both them girls looked alike provides a crucial investigative breakthrough, though it comes wrapped in the insensitive packaging of small-town gossip. the coffee shop becomes command central for unofficial case updates, where theories spread like wildfire and reputations can be destroyed over a single cup of coffee. The novel delves deep into how small communities respond to outsiders and difference. Sybil Adams' relationship with Nan Thomas existed in a careful gray area, acknowledged but rarely discussed openly. Even Sybil's sister Lena, a police officer familiar with society's prejudices, struggles to discuss her sister's sexuality. The investigation reveals a community that prides itself on tolerance while practicing a form of don't ask, don't tell acceptance. When Jeffrey discovers Sybil was a lesbian, he handles the information with professional discretion, recognizing that in Hartsdale, some truths are better whispered than spoken aloud. The investigation peels back layers of carefully maintained small-town appearances, revealing the rot beneath. Long-buried secrets surface, showing how years of shared history can mask dangerous obsessions and deep-seated resentments. By the novel's end, Jeffrey's perception of his town has fundamentally changed. Driving back into Grant County after closing the case, he feels permanently changed, unable to view his community with the same trust. The familiar streets and friendly waves now carry darker undertones, a reminder that evil often wears a neighbor's face, and that small-town charm can mask the deadliest of secrets. The novel's most profound exploration concerns what it costs to survive trauma. For Sarah, survival meant compartmentalizing her rape experience, locking it away to continue functioning. This strategy allowed her professional success, but contributed to the failure of her marriage to Jeffrey, as she couldn't fully open herself emotionally. The annual postcards from her attacker force her to repeatedly confront her trauma, preventing complete healing. Lena's survival comes at an even steeper price. After being rescued from Jeb's attic where she was nailed to the floor, she refuses to speak to anyone. The novel's final scene captures the permanent damage inflicted. When Sarah begins to say, "He can't hurt you anymore," she stops. Both women understanding that Jeb will continue hurting Lena every day for the rest of her life. Some wounds never fully heal. Julia Matthews represents the tragic alternative. Unable to bear the weight of her trauma, she chooses suicide over continued suffering. Her death forces the other characters to confront the possibility that sometimes survival itself may be the harder path. Even Jeffrey pays a price for his proximity to such darkness. After finding Lena in Jeb's attic, a room designed as a torture chamber with black paint, plywood-covered windows, and chains with nail holes showing where victims had been crucified, Jeffrey feels like a returning soldier. His innocence is another casualty of the investigation. Yet amid this bleakness, the novel offers a tentative hope through connection. In the final scene, Jeffrey helps Sarah repair a sink drain, retrieving her old wedding ring from the pipe. Though initially resistant to rekindling their relationship, Sarah eventually agrees when Jeffrey suggests bringing dinner the next night. This small domestic moment suggests that while trauma may never fully disappear, human connection offers the possibility of moving forward. At its core, Blindsided explores the darkness lurking within seemingly ordinary people. Jeb McGuire embodies this duality. The town pharmacist who meticulously helps elderly customers with their medications, remembers their grandchildren's names, and charms Sarah with his gentle manner and intellectual curiosity. His carefully constructed normal exterior, complete with a well-maintained boat for weekend lake outings and encyclopedic knowledge of local birds, makes his sadistic violence all the more shocking. His transformation from trusted community pillar to revealed monster forces readers to question their own ability to truly know those around them. The novel suggests that recognizing this capacity for darkness is essential for true self-knowledge. Sarah must acknowledge her rape experience as an integral part of her identity rather than something separate she can lock away in some mental vault. Her attempts to compartmentalize this trauma only lead to its resurgence in unexpected and damaging ways, affecting her relationships and professional judgment. Jeffrey must confront his own capacity for violence when he nearly beats Jack Wright to death during their confrontation, revealing how thin the veneer of civilization can be when pushed to extremes. Lena faces her complicated feelings toward her sister, including long-suppressed jealousy about Sybil's relationship with Nan and resentment over always being the responsible one while Sybil pursued her dreams. Religious imagery throughout the novel underscores this exploration of darkness and light, creating a complex tapestry of moral ambiguity. The killer carves cross-shaped wounds into his victim's flesh, positions them in crucifixion poses, and quotes Bible verses during his attacks with a scholar's precision. This perversion of sacred symbols suggests that even our highest aspirations and most cherished beliefs can be corrupted and twisted into instruments of evil. When Jeb tells Lena, "Blood makes a good lubricant," before torturing her, he demonstrates how completely moral frameworks can be inverted to justify depravity, using the language of practicality to mask unspeakable cruelty. The novel's title, Blindsided, works on multiple levels, referring literally to Sybil's physical blindness, but metaphorically to everyone's inability to see the darkness in others and themselves. This collective blindness extends beyond individual characters to encompass the entire community, which has chosen not to see various forms of abuse and corruption festering beneath its peaceful surface. Only by confronting this blindness can characters move toward healing and authenticity. In the final scene, Sarah's retrieval of her wedding ring from a clogged drainpipe becomes a powerful symbol of recovering something valuable that was hidden in darkness. This suggests that acknowledging our shadows, both personal and collective, may be the first step toward genuine connection and, perhaps, redemption. The novel ultimately argues that true sight requires the courage to look unflinchingly at both the light and dark within ourselves and others.